It's Monday, September 28th, and the story he's tried to lock down for years is out. We start here. With just weeks to go in the presidential campaign, someone's given up Donald Trump's tax returns.
Donald Trump only paid a total federal income tax of $750.
We'll walk you through the most revealing discoveries. Meanwhile, the president's pick for the Supreme Court begins the most turbocharged confirmation process in modern history.
What's really at risk? The number one election year issue, health care.
How Democrats plan to deploy their limited toolkit. And the governor of Florida says open up your bars and restaurants or else.
They can do reasonable regulations, but you can't just say no.
How a push to reopen turned into a surprise command. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. If you didn't already have it in your calendar, the first presidential debate is tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And the first one is always the one that grabs the most attention. It sets the tone for the final months of the campaign. Well, this weekend, ABC News put out a new national poll showing where things stand pre-debate. And before debate number one 4 years ago, we had Hillary Clinton ahead by 2 points. 2 points. This time...
Well, President Trump needs to gain. Our poll is out this morning showing that Joe Biden has a 10-point lead.
Now, just like 4 years ago, winning the popular vote does not mean you will win the Electoral College. But unfortunately for President Trump, these numbers do not look like those from 4 years ago.
President Trump leads by 13 points among men, Biden by 31 points among women.
For example, in 2016, Clinton won moderate voters, people in the middle, by 12%. Joe Biden is leading that same group by 47 points. Trump won white voters by 20. Well, again, against Biden, that lead has shrunk to 6, mainly because women voters have swung so drastically against the president. Like, women who identify as independents. They're not Democrats, they're not Republicans. Clinton won them by 4 points. Biden's leading them by 57. Now, there are warning flags for Biden here. Let's talk about them. People are not as enthusiastic about him. Voters trusted him way more to handle the pandemic a couple months ago. The numbers have evened out. And to give you a sense of how important this debate is, Biden has basically stopped campaigning in recent days as his team preps for what Trump could throw at him. But the really interesting thing here in all these numbers is only about 5% of the country says they could be persuaded to change their mind at this point. Vote for the other guy. So what would actually do that?
Bombshell headline late today, the New York Times obtaining information on President Trump's tax returns.
In your tax return, sir, does that sound right that you were paying a couple $100 a year in federal income taxes?
No, it's fake news. It's totally fake news. Made up, fake.
Well, last night, the New York Times did something that journalists have been trying to do for years. They were able to claim that they've obtained the data from Donald Trump's tax returns. Let's start the week with our reporter who's been covering the Trump beat every day of his life since Trump announced his candidacy. ABC senior editorial producer John Santucci's with us. John, ABC has not seen the documents being reported on here, but what do the Times say are in them?
Brad, how much time you got? I mean, this reads like a flip book of Donald Trump's tax returns in print. The only thing, though, is the Times is not publishing them. They're saying this protect their sources. But it is a litany of headline after headline.
The Times reporting the president paid just $750 in taxes in 2016 and again his first year in office.
The Times is reporting, based on their sources, Donald Trump only paid a total federal income tax of $750. That's not $750,000. That's not $7.5 million. That's $750, Brad, for a guy that has bragged about being a billionaire.
I don't need anybody's money. I'm using my own money. I'm not using the lobbyists. I'm not using donors. I don't care. I'm really rich. I'll show you that in a second.
The list just goes on and on and on about the ways Trump, for 10 out of the last 15 years, according to the Times, did not even pay any federal income tax, writing in one of his returns in 2014 that he made a total profit for that year, Brad, of zero income.
In 10 out of the 15 years before that, he reportedly paid no taxes at all because he reported losing more money than he made.
But just to go back for a second, how is it possible, John, to, you know, for a multi-millionaire to walk out the door just paying $750 in taxes for a year? Like, I'm looking at a breakdown right now that says basically if you're making 20 grand a year, you should be paying about that much in taxes.
They cite an incredible amount of deductions, tax code benefits that he's used over time. $70,000 for a deduction for somebody to style his hair for The Apprentice. We know how proud he is of his hair. We know he says it's real. Well, clearly it costs $70,000 to maintain.
Is that sucker real?
It's thin, but it's real.
Okay.
He deducted linens. He deducted countless things. And the other thing that's interesting, Brad, is that the general and administrative expenses for one of his golf clubs, this one in Bedminster, New Jersey, allegedly increased fivefold from 2016 to 2017. What was the difference between those 2 years, Brad? Well, Donald Trump happens to live in the White House.
The Times reports the president profited off of his candidacy with initiation fees skyrocketing at his exclusive Mar-a-Lago club, but he is losing money. Most of the revenue from The Apprentice show is gone, according to the Times.
And he's refused to verify any of this by actually showing his tax returns, right? He says they're under audit, but we know that the IRS, like, that's not an IRS rule. He could show them. He's chosen not to.
You have people that in the IRS, they treat me very, very badly, but they're under audit.
But it does appear that audit, though, is very real with very real potential consequences. I should say the Trump Organization tells us this report is filled with inaccuracies. They say he's paid millions in personal taxes. But as the Times notes, they also seem to be lumping in Social Security and Medicare and all these other payments lots of Americans pay to the federal government. John, moving on. I get the concept in this country that if you lose money, you can offset future tax payments, but he went like 10 other years without paying taxes, according to the Times. So is he just losing money all of these years?
He claims he does, but the Times says otherwise, and they point to all the different gimmicks and trades here.
Can you give people an idea of how much you actually are paying?
Yeah, basically. Well, first of all, I've paid a lot, and I paid a lot of state income taxes, too. The New York State charges a lot, and I paid a lot of money in state. It'll all be revealed. It's going to come out.
He's been talking about this since he was a candidate. But what the Times notes here in their reporting is that the audit centers around a legitimacy of a $72.9 million tax refund that he claimed and received after he after declaring huge losses. Here's the issue, though. If he loses the audit, which the Times notes, it does appear it is still ongoing. If he loses, which is what it's looking like, between penalties, fines, and the fact that it's been so many years after the fact, he could owe $100 million to the Internal Revenue Service, Brad. That is, of course, separate from all of the loans and debts he owes to various banks and industries across the country.
And that's a big deal, especially since he hires and fires the people at the IRS.
Correct.
The only years that anybody's ever seen were a couple of years when he had to turn them over to state authorities when he was trying to get a casino license, and they showed he didn't pay any federal income tax. So
that makes
if he's
smart.
Paid zero, that means zero for troops, zero for vets.
But John, I mean, we didn't know all the dollar figures, but we knew the bare bones of this narrative, right? And in fact, not just in the last year or two, we knew this in the 2016 election, and people made their choice. So I guess I'm trying to figure out if Team Trump is really rattled by this going into the debates, or if this is just essentially, hey, yeah, you know me, like, here we are.
Well, but Brad, hold on a second. You're right. You are right that, you know, most Americans wouldn't be surprised this, that, and whatever. But I'm sorry. When you get to the fact, however much many Americans pay around the country, to think that a billionaire with an unbelievable, so he claims, fortune, with a vast series of real estate empires and businesses across the globe, the fact that he only paid $750, again, according to the Times, that is going to have to be something they're going to have to explain for voters.
Right.
And quite frankly, Brad, unless they can come out and wash it away in a way that's actually provable, you know, I don't know how much fake news is going to be swallowable, is what the president said in his press briefing for Sunday night.
Yeah, wild optics, especially in an election where people are listing the economy, not COVID-19, the economy as their chief concern. It seems like there are two big takeaways from this Times piece. One, the president is either a cheater on his taxes or his businesses just lose staggering amounts of money on the regular. Like, those are the options. And two, this is just the beginning. The Times says there are more details in these documents. They will be writing them all up into their own stories as we get closer to November 3rd. It's not the end. John Santucci in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, all this, and we still haven't talked about the once-in-a-lifetime Supreme Court pick, how the rest of this process is about to go down starting today after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't that hard to read the tea leaves. On Friday night, exactly 1 week after the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, sources started confirming what had been suspected for days.
News from the White House coming in, sources telling ABC News that President Trump intends to pick Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court.
And on Saturday, President Trump made it official.
Amy Coney Barrett will decide cases based on the text of the Constitution as written.
And if you woke up from a year-long nap on Saturday afternoon, all of this, from the president's remarks to Amy Coney Barrett herself.
Members of the United States Senate, I look forward to working with you during the confirmation process, and I will do my very best to demonstrate that I am worthy of your support.
All the words here would have sounded super normal, except what we are about to see is unlike anything we've ever seen.
Never before in our nation's history has a Supreme Court justice been nominated and installed while a presidential election is already underway.
A critical seat dramatically reshaping the court being debated within days of a presidential election. The challenger for vice president set to question that nominee directly in Senate hearings. And all of this happening without even the option of a filibuster to slow it down. Let's bring in our Senate savant, ABC's Capitol Hill producer, Trish Turner. Trish, RBG is not even in the ground yet still, right? But we got a nominee, so just break it down. What is the process starting today till if and when Amy Coney Barrett gets confirmed?
Boy, this is like lightning speed. First off, the White House is going to deliver a bunch of paperwork very early. Never seen anything like this. Usually takes weeks for this to be done. And they're saying they might even do it as early as today.
This should be a straightforward and prompt confirmation. Should be very easy. Good luck. It's going to be very quick.
The nominee does, Brad, what any nominee does at this high a level, and they start to pay courtesy calls. A little different in a pandemic. Some of these will be, you know, maybe some video chats.
And if the Senate does me the honor of confirming me, I pledge to discharge the responsibilities of this job to the very best of my ability.
But she is going to pay a visit early on to the majority leader. And normally, the second visit is to the minority leader, and that's Chuck Schumer in the Senate, except that he said on Sunday,
I believe, first, that the whole process has been illegitimate, and second, because she's already stated that she is for overturning the ACA, I will not meet with her.
It does seem unusual, but hearkening back to 2016, Democrats truly are smarting President Obama's nominee Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court. Republicans refused to even meet with him, and that's every Republican. But some Democrats are going to meet with Judge Barrett, and then we launch right into hearings.
When do you expect these hearings to start?
October the 12th. That'll be 16 days from nomination. And 24 of the 42 Supreme Court justices who've had hearings were done within 16 days.
The average time from the paperwork hitting the Senate to a hearing happening is 40 days. So October 12th, 13th, and 14th, 3 days, possibly four for hearings. And then, there'll be another sort of grease lightning race to a vote in committee. We think that's going to happen possibly as early as October 22nd. That's a Friday. And then that sets up easily for Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, to hold a full Senate confirmation vote before Election Day.
Our brand new poll with the Washington Post shows a majority of Americans believe the president elected on November 3rd should fill this Supreme Court vacancy.
I urge the American people to keep voting, to let your current senators know that you want to be heard before a vote on confirmation of a new justice.
So this is the part where I ask you what Democrats could do to slow this down, right? But it doesn't even sound, Trish, like the senators themselves think that they'll be able to slow this down.
Yeah, that's right. They know full well all the procedural tactics that outside, advisors and analysts are telling them to use. Well, the Senate's number two was on ABC this weekend, and even he said, you know what? There's nothing we can do.
We can slow it down, perhaps a matter of hours, maybe days at the most, but it can't stop the outcome.
Remember, Brad, if the Democratic leader goes trying to shorten, committee proceedings, which he has the ability to do, that only speeds up the confirmation process for this nominee. Republicans will just basically say, well, okay, if we can only meet for, a couple of hours today, then a couple hours tomorrow, we're done.
Or if they kind of like boycott and say, like, we're not going to show up for a vote on this day. They're like, okay, we'll vote without you.
Well, we'll vote without you. That's right.
Now, there was talk initially that the Democrats might even boycott being at the hearing. Do you expect that to be the case?
Well, it'll make them quicker.
So what is the strategy from Democrats then? I mean, what will they try to do? Because I'm sure they won't be silent.
Yeah, great question. So what they have told us, and we saw a remarkable pivot over the weekend.
A vote for Judge Barrett is a vote to take away health care and its protections for over 130 million Americans who now have protections against pre-existing conditions.
Democrats almost uniformly saying what's really at risk, the number one election year issue, health care.
The clear focus is this is about your health care. This is about whether or not the ACA will exist.
7 days after the election, the Supreme Court is going to be hearing oral arguments in a case that could very well tear down the Affordable Care Act and with it, its mandate for insurance coverage for those with pre-existing conditions. So that's at least 33 million Americans at risk of being thrown off their insurance coverage.
But so if you're a progressive Democrat, then, Trish, like, aren't you telling these senators, like, whoop-de-freaking-do? I mean, maybe this does get everyone really fired up. Maybe it does get just a blowout at the polls for Democrats on election day or election season. But, I mean, you still have a 6-3 conservative court for the foreseeable future with all this, right? I mean, is that kind of the best that Democrats can hope for, is just motivate people at the polls and give up the court?
Yeah, there's an outside sliver that if they could push this after Election Day, then maybe, just maybe, if the Democrats flip the Senate, if Joe Biden becomes the president, they can make it politically unpalatable for enough Republicans to buck the president, the lame duck President Trump.
If the people do not choose Trump and choose me, President Trump's nomination should be withdrawn. I should nominate, chosen by a president who's just been elected.
The other, of course, Brad, is if the Democrats take the Senate, Joe Biden takes the presidency, then January 3rd, when Democrats come in, they can start the process moving to pass legislation to essentially expand the court.
I see. And that is all kind of predicated on this idea that Democrats are just so upset, so viscerally angry that they turn out en masse. But as it seems, I mean, Amy Coney Barrett is about to be Justice Amy Coney Barrett, whether before or after Election Day. Trish Turner in Washington. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
So on Friday morning, we told you that Indiana was telling its counties, Time to go back to normal. As long as people are wearing masks, you can go ahead and remove capacity restrictions on your bars and your restaurants. Theaters, concert halls, nightclubs, all of them, you're good to have them back at 100% capacity or as close to it as social distancing will allow. This was a big step, a controversial one for a state with 3,500 deaths from COVID-19 and a case count still about as high as it's ever been.
Florida's governor now moving to pull back restrictions even as that state hits a grim milestone.
700,000 cases. More than 14,000 deaths.
Well, later that day, Florida, which just recorded its 700,000th case and is still averaging about 100 deaths a day, made a surprise announcement of its own that in some ways goes even further. Let's go to ABC's producer, Scott Withers, who's based in South Florida. Scott, what was this announcement from Governor Ron DeSantis?
Well, Governor DeSantis basically said, hold my beer. We're going to up that.
In the state of Florida, we are today moving into what we initially called phase three. And what that'll mean for the restaurants is that there will not be limitations from the state of Florida.
And so he threw open the doors to the state. Restaurants and bars specifically. So now every restaurant and every bar has the right to operate.
The order that I'm signing today will guarantee restaurants operate, will not allow closures. They can operate at a minimum of 50% regardless of local rule.
And then he wants the state and the economy moving again. So he told everybody, if you have a business, you can open your business, especially bars and restaurants, at 100%.
Huge relief. I have chills.
I think it's going to be great for just even for Wynwood itself to have all the bars back open again, to have the foot traffic back.
Now, there is a caveat. He said each local county government or city government can put restrictions, but the onus is on them. They actually have to go out to each one of these businesses and do a review and see how much it would cost that business to shut down to 50% or less than 100%. There's no way that city governments or county governments could go and review every single business or restaurant or bar.
But wait. So this is different from other states that are saying, hey, you were only allowed to have 25%. Now you're allowed to have up to 50% or up to even 100%. This is saying you're not even really allowed to go below 50%. You have to be open, right? Like, what happens if as a county you're like, no, sorry, we just don't feel comfortable with that?
Yeah, you can't do that. Once the governor signs an executive order, that's the law of the land here. And he basically said, going forward, we are not going to close anything down under any circumstance.
Everybody has an opportunity and the right to work. Every business has the right to operate. You know, some of the locals may be able to, you know, they can do reasonable regulations, but you can't just say no. You can't say no after 6 months and just have people twisting in the wind.
The governor even hoping for a full Super Bowl in February.
So the most that limitations can be put on a restaurant or a bar or any business is 50%. So here in Miami-Dade County, they worked all weekend to try and come up with, how does this work?
We just finished implementing all of the ideas we had for being safe at 50%. Some of the staff training was geared towards that.
And basically, restaurants and businesses can be at 100% if they can keep their tables 6 feet apart.
For us and every restaurant I know of, the capacity isn't the limiting factor, it's the geometry.
But if they can't get to that 50%, then they can put their tables closer together.
What does this mean for the outlook for Florida, Scott? Because, you know, for a while, Florida was the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic in the U.S. Now, its positive test numbers have decreased dramatically. But like I said, it's still averaging like 100 deaths a day. That has not gone down nearly as much. What do health experts say is going to happen next?
Most of the people that we talked to were kind of shocked and stunned.
It honestly looks like it's business as usual. It looks like how it was pre-COVID era.
But that's how Governor DeSantis has run the entire epidemic, just kind of surprise announcements. This announcement that came on Friday came one day after he met with President Trump, who is here in town. So a lot of people are saying this seems pretty political with an election coming up. And it goes further than just restaurants. He also basically took away any enforcement of mask rules.
I think we need to get away from trying to penalize people for social distancing and just work with people constructively.
Now, no city or county can enforce a mask rule and fine someone for it. He suspended all the fines. So if you already had a ticket for not wearing your mask, say a $50 ticket or a $100 ticket, you don't have to pay it.
You can wear a mask and open up your economy.
I mean, that's the one thing you can do that allows everything else to open up. He's almost making it as hard as possible for us to open up safely.
Now, here in Miami-Dade County, the mayor here says they're going to keep handing out those citations, but there's no teeth. And we're already starting to see that. Like on Sunday, when I was out and about in my gym, people are already taking their mask off. At the dog park, they're not wearing their mask.
And like
anymore.
These are places where it would have been, these are places where it has been mandatory to wear them up till now.
The sign is still up at the dog park saying you have to wear your mask. But according to the governor, what's the big deal if you don't wear it? You're not going to get in trouble because you're not going to get a fine.
And the irony here, Scott, is that the last time you and I were speaking about this, you were saying that DeSantis had really ceded control of the issue to the counties, that he was not willing to step in and say, you've got to restrict this, you've got to restrict that. He is taking control now to say you're not allowed to restrict a lot of things. Scott Withers in Miami. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Third and three.
And one last thing.
Possibly. Montana looking, looking. Throwing in the end zone. Clark caught it. Dwight Clark.
He's famous for rescuing his team. This weekend, Joe Montana rescued a lot more than that. The Hall of Famer quarterback was at home with his wife when they allegedly interrupted someone trying to kidnap their 9-month-old grandchild. As an unidentified woman comes into their house, she lifts the sleeping child out of its playpen and tries to leave. But according to the police report, Montana happened to stop her and his wife physically pried the child away before the woman fled.
Joe Montana flagged patrolling deputies nearby that a woman he didn't know just tried to take his grandchild.
She was found and arrested on burglary and kidnapping charges, but it shines a light on just how quickly child abductions can happen, although the FBI says only a 0.1% of missing children were actually kidnapped by a stranger. Montana issued a quick thank you for the support tweet, I'd like to be private, so he's otherwise not commenting on the most important and fortunate interception of his life. Like, every parent is already paranoid about their kids, then you think it'll get easier as a grandparent, like, yeesh. Happy ending here, at least. Big week in politics, big month in the future of this country. As always, you can keep up to the minute at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milton. See you tomorrow.